from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Most people know Scott Sifton as a state senator from South St. Louis County, but he was also in law school. In fact, Sifton often used his skills as an attorney in Jefferson City to debate with his colleagues and navigate complex contours of public policy. Sifton has been out of office since 2021, but he's made a significant mark in the legal world. He's been involved in a high-stakes legal battle that started in St. Louis over how Roundup is labeled. The U.S. Supreme Court heard the case, known as Monsanto versus Durnell, earlier this week, and Sifton was in Washington, D.C. as part of the legal team defending a $1.25 million verdict to a St. Louis man who used the popular herbicide. Sifton joins us to talk about his legal journey. He served in the Missouri Senate from 2013 through 2021 and in the Missouri House from 2011 to 2013. Scott, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you, Jason. It's good to be with you again. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I was telling you beforehand, it's been like 6 years since we saw each other, even though we've talked on the phone since. And you look exactly the same. So congratulations on not aging. You and Chris Koster have something in common. So as simply as you can, what is Monsanto versus Durnell, and what was the question the Supreme Court was dealing with on Monday?
Sure, and let me begin by saying, and it's an important thing for me to mention, there are rules of professional conduct that govern what lawyers can say about pending cases, and specifically in Missouri, it's Rule 4-3.6 regarding trial publicity. I want to make it very clear that I'm very mindful of what I can and can't do. Happy to try to inform your listeners about the case, but at the same time, I operate under certain constraints in terms of what I can say. So being very careful.
I'm going to do whatever I can to jeopardize your law license in this interview.
But please don't.
No, I'm kidding. Continue, sir.
Yeah, no. So the issue in the case that was argued on Monday before the Supreme Court in open court was federal preemption. It's a labeling case where the EPA approved a label for the product. And the question is whether when the EPA does that, a state court civil jury can nonetheless find it suspect under state tort law and enter a verdict as the jury in this case did.
And this is kind of like the latest battle in this internal question about whether federal law preempts state law. Can you talk about that concept more broadly? Because it feels like there have been cases like this since maybe the beginning of this country.
Sure. Speaking about preemption generically, we deal with it all the time. We certainly dealt with it quite a bit in the Missouri Senate in some very controversial matters, including a minimum wage bill that you may remember that I was quite involved in the debate of. We have the supremacy clause. We've always had the supremacy clause. The question is, in any given case, what does it mean? What are its implications? And there is a large and very complex body of law that has developed over the nearly now 250 years we've been a republic to set parameters on when states are preempted by federal law from doing certain things and when they are not.
There are a ton of lawyers involved in this case, so I don't want to give our listeners a false impression that you were doing like literally everything. But can you just talk about how you were involved in this case?
Sure. So I was on the trial team. The case was tried in October of 2023. I took the depositions of the two experts that were called to the stand by the other side in the case. Did everything that trial counsel do. My role was more confined to arguing the law, the sorts of issues that are taken up not in the presence of the jury. But then when there was a cert application filed with the United States Supreme Court, I had a hand in that briefing on whether cert should be granted. And then when the ultimate, you know, once cert was granted and the ultimate brief was prepared, I took part in editing that.
For people who are not attorneys, how rare is it for a lawyer to have a case they're involved in get to the Supreme Court of the United States?
Super rare, unbelievably rare. I actually had, in my very first year of practice, I very nearly had a case go. It was
In 2012, right? Because you're 26 years old right now.
Well, I'll say it this way: it was before we had that Y2K problem.
Understood. Continue, sir.
So the case at that time, and I was literally not even a first year associate, like a first few months associate. We had a class action that had settled here in St. Louis involving MSD. There was an MSD class action that settled. And there were objectors, and the question was basically, was the settlement fair to everybody that was going to be bound by it? And that issue was ultimately appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. There was another case almost just like it that same term. Our case revolved around the Missouri state class action rule. The other case involved the federal class action rule. The Supreme Court took that case instead of ours, I think because it was the federal case, not the state case, and actually issued the ruling that we would have wanted them to rule in our case. So I was barely not part of a Supreme Court case right out of the gate in my career, and I never had anything else get close to the U.S. Supreme Court until this case.
The Supreme Court does not televise their proceedings, and they've only recently started releasing audio from the oral arguments. So you were in the courtroom. Tell me what it was like to see these arguments happen.
Every one of these people has written something profound, whether you agree with it or disagree with it. These are people that you know, every law student in the country knows the temperament and tendencies of all nine on the bench at any given time. These are the leading lights in our profession. Again, no matter how much we may agree or very strongly disagree with their rulings, you know, these folks are well known to us. But to actually see them in action, you know, meters away from where you're sitting, and to watch them do what they do for a few hours on end, is indescribable, just absolutely overwhelming.
I think that people may be surprised to hear this because I'm going to just be very blunt. The Supreme Court is not a beloved institution, depending on what your point of view is, or depending on how they decide on cases. Obviously, people on the left have not been happy about a lot of things they've done, but people on the right were mad, for instance, about the tariff decision. But you seem to be very impressed by the way they handled not only this case, but the other case that they were hearing on Monday. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how maybe they aren't these caricatured monsters that people think they are.
You know, I saw, particularly in the Chatria case, which was the other case heard on Monday, it's a criminal case, geofencing, use of geofencing to track mobile phones in an area where a crime has been committed to try to identify suspects. And that case in particular, that argument went more than 2 hours. All nine justices were actively engaged in it. And not just that, but genuinely intellectually curious and flexible about how the case should be ruled upon. And I, you know, that's one set of facts. And of course, then, you know, I get to see them argue on Monday. I say some nice things about their process on social media. And then, of course, they turn around 48 hours later and issue probably the most controversial decision they're going to issue this term and maybe in several years. Although the Dobbs case was obviously very controversial
in
as well.
In a case that will affect Missouri because of its impact on the first congressional district.
Yeah.
But continue.
Yeah, Louisiana versus Calais, a racial redistricting case.
Do you think they should televise Supreme Court hearings?
I think it's an important question, and I think it's one that should continue to be debated. And of course, we had similar questions in the Missouri Senate about, you know, what we allowed. But with respect to the U.S. Supreme Court, I think it's a fair question. Do we want these nine justices who are already shoulder the responsibility of being the last and final word on the law you know, it's that, you know, they're not final because they're infallible. They're infallible because they're final, as Justice the late Justice Scalia put it once. But do we really want these folks worried about how what they are saying or doing or asking is going to play on camera? You know, do we want them flexing for the press in oral argument? And I think we definitely don't want that. You know, I do think it's good that oral argument is now available. The audio is now available. But I don't think we want them worried about how this is going to play. I think we want them doing their job and focusing on the law and the merits of the cases that are in front of them. Again, whether we may agree or very strongly disagree with the outcome in any given case.
Let's talk about you for a moment. You termed out of the Missouri Senate in 2021, and except for a brief Senate bid in 2022 that you ended up not pursuing, you've been out of electoral politics for about 6 years. And I guess this brings up an interesting question. Is it possible to have a really successful and busy legal career and be in elected office, or do you basically have to choose between the two?
I'll say this. I think it's definitely possible. Is it easy? No. And then, you know, layer on being a father and everything else we do in life. Yeah, I mean, you make challenges and sacrifices to serve. And certainly I could have spent the 10 years I was in the legislature, if I'd have practiced law exclusively during that time period, I'd probably be a bit closer to retirement. But
I was going to say, because like you can probably practice law here and there, but if you're in Jefferson City for 5 months out of the year, you probably have to limit the scope of things that you're doing, or you just have to like advise other attorneys on things, basically.
There's actually there are some things that are done to protect attorneys who serve in the legislature in that regard. We do have the ability for those of us who litigate to continue cases so that we're not getting called to trial in the middle of the legislative session. And that's something I tried not to use. I tried to make sure that we scheduled trials at a time of the year when I was available to focus on that more or less exclusively. And in that regard, other than the day I got sworn into the Missouri House, my very first day in the Missouri legislature, I got a call from the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals on an oral argument that they had not sent me notice of being set. And so I wound up having to argue an Eighth Circuit case, which is one rung below the U.S. Supreme Court, within the first 2 weeks of serving in the Missouri House, which was a bit of a challenge, but we got it done.
Yeah, and it was an unexceptionally a boring session where you got rid of a congressional district and, passed a lot of legislation. But let's not dwell on the past. Do you think there's anything about being in the Senate in particular that made you a better lawyer? Or did your legal skills just atrophy from all those late night filibusters?
No, I was trying cases and arguing cases and handling litigation the entire while. So I wouldn't say that it limited me in that regard. I had to manage things a little bit differently than I would have otherwise. But no, I think that there were some good synergies. I think that certainly having some, there was a 2-year period where I was the only licensed attorney in the Missouri Senate, or the only practicing attorney rather. There was a second senator who was licensed but had never practiced.
Bob Onder. I think he got a law degree thinking he could do both, be a law degree and be a medical doctor, and he realized, no, I can only do one or the other. So continue.
Yeah, I wouldn't speak for Bob on that, but the point was there are fewer attorneys in the legislature than I think most people assume. And I think one of the great things about the Missouri legislature, particularly the House, is you've got folks from all walks of life. And I think that that's great. I think that leads to better decisions. I'm definitely not one of those attorneys who think that attorneys should rule or decide everything. Even when I was on a school board, I was one of seven. And I said, I don't think there should be seven lawyers on the school board. I don't think there should be four lawyers on the school board, but I also don't think there should be zero. I think you want one person in the room who's worried about the sunshine law, if nothing else, just to make sure that we're doing things, in the public light appropriately.
Scott Sifton is a former Missouri legislator who was involved in the case that was heard before the U.S. Supreme Court this week involving Roundup labeling. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks, Jason.
This episode was produced, recorded, and edited by Jason Rosenbaum. Podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.